Since 1969, thousands have died in the tiny province of Northern Ireland, both Catholic and Protestant, in an ongoing tragedy the world has come to call the Troubles. And a generation of children has grown up knowing only one world, a world of barricades, bullets, and barbed wire.
This little fingers sing about growing up in Belfast. I think they express more exuberantly than anyone else the punk ideals. Anybody can get up on stage and sing about their lives.
Well, be the trend, the trend, the trend, the trend. Be the trend, the world. No lies, no love.
The strength of Stiff Little Fingers' music lies in its direct account of working-class teenage life.
I don't think we were aware that we were going to upset anybody. We were hoping that it would ring a bell with people at home and, if nothing else, make them sort of stop and say, aye, actually, that is actually what living here is like, you know.
To get to the heart of the SLF story, though, we need to go back to Belfast in the mid-1970s. An austere and unrelentingly bleak cultural landscape, where, as Jake Burns remembers, there wasn't exactly much to do.
My overriding memory of Belfast around 74, 75 was one of pretty much complete boredom. I know that might sound a bit crazy considering what was actually happening on the streets, but as a direct consequence of what was happening on the streets, bands wouldn't come and play over there. And, you know, certainly nobody was playing what we wanted to hear.
So, with a sense of purpose and place and a lineup made up of Henry Clooney on guitar, Brian Falloon on drums, Ali McMurdy on bass, and Jake Burns on guitar, the band was ready for action. The name, Stiff Little Fingers, taken from a B-side of a single by fellow punk practitioners The Vibrators, was already chosen, and only the issue of who would be the lead singer remained a problem. Jake Burns again.
I became the singer by default during rehearsal. Nobody wants to sing, nobody wants to go up the front, because, I mean, your voice sounds horrible through a microphone the first time you hear it. And it takes almost as much learning as it does to play an instrument to learn how to actually sing into a mic. Basically, it was probably trying to emulate a cross between Lee Brillo and Joe Strummer, and it ended up just getting the gargling with the broken glass aspect that people always refer to.
So with glass duly gargled and band duties decided upon, Stiff Little Fingers sought out some professional help before they took the next step. That came when Jake Burns approached a local journalist, Gordon Ogilvie, for some advice. Having caught their live show, he suggested they go away and write songs about what they knew best, growing up in Troubles blighted Belfast. Taking the advice to heart, Jake swiftly picked up his pen and quickly knocked out Suspect Device.
The Troubles refers to a violent 30-year conflict framed by a civil rights march in Londonderry on October 5, 1968, and the Good Friday Agreement on April 10, 1998. At the heart of the conflict lay the constitutional status of Northern Ireland. The goal of the Unionist and overwhelmingly Protestant majority was to remain part of the United Kingdom. The goal of the Nationalist and Republican, almost exclusively Catholic minority was to become a part of the Republic of Ireland. This was a territorial conflict, not a religious one. At its heart lay two mutually exclusive visions of national identity and national belonging. During the Troubles, the scale of the killings perpetrated by all sides, Republican and Loyalist paramilitaries and the security forces, eventually exceeded 3,600. As many as 50,000 people were physically maimed or injured, with countless others psychologically damaged by the conflict. In 1968, the Northern Ireland Parliament had been dominated by Unionists for over 50 years. Its attempts to solve social and political ills, such as institutional discrimination against Catholics, were too slow for Nationalists and Republicans and too quick for many Unionists. This gave rise to growing tension and violence between the two communities. The mounting scale of the disorder led successive UK governments to intervene. In 1969, the situation was so grave that British troops were sent to help restore order. By 1972, things had deteriorated so badly that the British government suspended the Northern Ireland Parliament and imposed direct rule from London. At this time, the Provisional Irish Republican Army, the main Republican paramilitary organization in Northern Ireland, was uninterested in any solution short of British withdrawal and Irish unification. The Provisionals had split from the official IRA in 1969. For them, the long war was the only option. This strategy had been gaining traction since the introduction of internment or imprisonment without trial in 1971 and the killing of 13 people by the Parachute Regiment on Bloody Sunday the following year. When secret talks with the UK government in 1972 collapsed, the IRA leadership resolved to erode the British presence in Northern Ireland through a war of attrition. On the other side, the major Loyalist paramilitary organizations of the Ulster Defence Association and the Ulster Volunteer Force had resolved to use violence of their own to resist Republican paramilitaries and to oppose Irish unification. It was amidst this fervent unrest that four teenage rock and roll fans in Belfast, Northern Ireland, found solace in a band they called Highway Star. They were Jake Burns on vocals and guitar, Henry Clooney on guitar, Gordon Blair on bass, and Brian Falloon on drums. This is from Henry Clooney's website. In 1974, my folks had given me a guitar for Christmas, and I had begun to think of myself as a guitar player. Of course, it was one of those first guitars where the strings stand about 1 inch off the fretboard, one of those unplayable, untunable creatures that shops advertise as beginner instruments. But at the time, I didn't care. I loved to play it loud and proud. Looking back, I wonder how the folks or my brothers put up with the racket coming from my bedroom. But they did. In the same year, I met Jake Burns at school. We shared a love for music, and I'd often find myself at his house listening to music. I suppose it was some kind of destiny, and we soon found ourselves putting together a group called Highway Star, a rock group, gigging locally, playing cover versions of rock standards. At some point, Gordon Blair left and was replaced by Ally McCordy on bass. Blair would go on to play with a band called Rudy that you can hear on my punk episode, episode 22. It was at this point, 1977, that the band was exposed to punk rock and decided to morph Highway Star into a punk band, which they thought about calling The Fast, but eventually renamed Stiff Little Fingers, after the Vibrators song that we heard earlier in the episode. Belfast journalist Colin McClelland took his friend Gordon Ogilvie, a writer for Belfast's Daily Express, to see Stiff Little Fingers at the Glenmachan Hotel, the CBGBs of the Irish punk scene, in late 1977. Ogilvie was impressed and inspired, and set out to convince the band that they should write original punk songs in a social realist vein, tackling topics that were important to them, specifically their life experiences, coming of age amidst the turmoil and violence of the Troubles in Northern Ireland. Jake Burns would call the band the alternative to News at 10. He also described the band as the best thing to happen to Northern Ireland since Van Morrison left.
Hey!
Ogilvy and McClelland were soon managing the band, and Ogilvy would begin a prolonged collaboration with Jake Burns on the early songs, specifically the lyrics. He often claimed that if they were the Stiff Little Fingers, he was the Stiff Little Thumb. Ogilvy, McClelland, and the four members of Stiff Little Fingers formed a record label they called Rigid Digits, and issued the band's first single, Suspect Device, backed with Wasted Life, in February of 1978. Ogilvy sent a copy to legendary BBC DJ and underground music champion John Peel, who played the song endlessly, leading to a distribution deal with Rough Trade. The Suspect Device single would sell 30,000 copies. A local fanzine named Alternative Ulster asked the band to write a song specifically for a giveaway flexi disc. Although the plans for the flexi disc fell through, the song Alternative Ulster became the first single released by Rough Trade Records. Alternative Ulster was an insistent plea for United Ireland. Ulster is a British shorthand term for Northern Ireland. The single was released in October of 1978. To quote an article from Sounds at the time, "In Ulster, the partisan local papers of the Republican and Loyalist causes have each claimed Stiff Little Fingers as their own, thereby decreeing that the other side shall be the band's enemy. The Stiff's plight is that in a country where for so long self-respect and dignity have been perverted to dependence on belonging to one organization or another, they reject the lot." Then they quote Jake Burns as saying, "But that middle isn't a comfortable place. It's the edge of a razor which we are standing on, because we're being aggressive from the middle, which nobody's done before. The members of Stiff Little Fingers came from working class families, half of them Catholic, half of them Protestant, but it didn't matter to them. As Jake said, we're just describing what it's like to live in Belfast, and people can make up their own minds. I don't want to preach to people. I just want to tell them what it's like." Alternative Ulster was a song written in the classic punk mode about having nothing to do, Jake Burns told The Guardian in 2003, because that was the overriding reality of life in Belfast for a teenager in the mid-70s. Not the fear of riots or bombs or whatever, it was the sheer tedium of having nowhere to go and nothing to do when you got there. And this was specifically because of all the violence. They didn't really have anywhere to go that was safe, and people weren't around, not a lot was happening, bands didn't come there to play, etc., because of all the violence and just the fear and unrest. They felt kind of trapped and isolated, I guess. Writer Mick Middles described the Stiff Little Fingers as the suppliers of reality, as opposed to the Clash's hard-edged fantasy. In the second half of 1978, Stiff Little Fingers toured with the Tom Robinson Band, who had a top 10 hit record at the time. Before this tour, they had only played a grand total of 34 gigs. In November of 78, they entered Spaceward Studios in Cambridge to record their first album with Rough Trade's in-house producer, Mayo Thompson, from the Red Crayola. When a deal with Island Records fell through, the band was forced to release the album, Inflammable Material, on their own in February of 1979. It's obviously a classic punk rock record with a great mix of anger and energy, and there's a lot of melody beneath the harsh vocals and the crusty guitars. Writer Mick Middles described Jake's voice as coarse, brittle, harsh, and penetrating, a perfect vehicle for the expression of solid anger. To quote Jake himself, "The first album sounds passionate, but it could be just because I scream and Henry thumps his guitar."
Lots of cash, and all the time it wasn't on.
The album sold more than 100,000 copies and became the first independent release to chart in the United Kingdom when it made it to number 14 on the album chart, paving the way for a recording contract with Chrysalis Records, which would give the band unusually broad artistic control. Let's hear a great song from Inflammable Material called No More of That. After the success of Inflammable Material, the band decided to make the big move to London, but drummer Brian Falloon decided to stay behind, which would inspire the lyrics to a new song called Wait and See. Also left behind was Colin McClelland, whose career in journalism took him to Dublin. He sold off his share of Rigid Digits, leaving Gordon Ogilvy as the band's sole manager. Stiff Little Fingers replaced drummer Falloon with Jim Riley and released a between-albums single and their Chrysalis debut, a song called Straw Dogs. The single came out in September of 1979. Apparently, many fans of the incendiary punk of Inflammable Material, yes, I just said Inflammable was incendiary. Apparently, many of the punk fans, were disappointed with Straw Dogs, but I think it's a great song. Jake Burns described it as a song about people killing other people for money.
Take the shilling.
Stiff Little Fingers took part in the Rock Against Racism Militant Entertainment Tour, which featured 40 different bands over the course of 23 dates, and was mounted in opposition to the far right in the run-up to the 1979 general election. And then entered the studio in January of 1980 to record their second album, Nobody's Heroes, for Chrysalis Records. Released in March of 1980, the album made it to number 8 on the UK album charts. Jake Burns described the album opener, Gotta Get Away, as simply about breaking out of our old lifestyles. And album track At the Edge he described as a looking back at home song. The whole first side of Nobody's Heroes is pretty incredible.
Yep.
Later in 1980, the band would release a live album called Hanks, H-A-N-X.
Hi, Henry, Jim, Ali, myself, Jake, Stiff Little Fingers, thank you very much for your time and your voices and your applause. Good night.
The band's more ambitious, for better or worse, third album, Go For It, would come out in April of 1981, and it's not as consistently good as the first two albums, but it has some great songs. Jake Burns said about Go For It, "People think we should have long faces given what we write about, but we think it's a very optimistic album. In our society, all the pressures are to conform, to repeat, to go under. You're told to stay as you are, to marry young, to live like your parents. Stay in your place, you're told over and over in all kinds of ways. What we're saying is go for it. Don't go under. Don't be told. There's more to life than that. Class, not creed, because of discrimination, there's violence, greed. I said we're all in a one, and one is all. Said throw away the guns and the war's all gone. Throw away the hunger and the war's all gone. Throw away the fighting and the war's all gone. Throw away the grudges and the war's all gone." Let's hear a great song from Go For It called Just Fade Away. Drummer Jim Riley left the band after Go For It and was replaced by Brian Dolphin Taylor from the Tom Robinson Band. This was the band's third drummer in as many years. January of 1982 saw the release of a four-song EP called £1, 10 Pence or Less, which featured this next song called Sad-Eyed People. We'll be right back. Stiff Little Fingers then went back into the studio with producer Nick Tauber to make their fourth album, which would be called Now Then and would come out in September of 1982. And it might just be the band's best album. It's spectacular all the way through. Go For It was definitely a transitional album, and by the time of Now Then, the band had successfully evolved from a punk band to a reasonably sophisticated power pop band. And the songs are great.
Oh,
That was the first song from Now Then called Falling Down. Now let's hear an amazing song from the record called The Price of Admission.
Okay, we're here with Jake Burns talking about Now Then. Now Then basically is an album that some fans love, some fans don't particularly. It's always on mixed reviews and stuff.
Yeah.
Starts with Falling Down. You've got a change of drummer, Jim out and Dolphin in. Tell us about Now Then.
Well, yeah, I mean, the change of drummer had happened slightly before that, because obviously we did the 1.10 or less EP with Dolph. So we were pretty much pretty well together as a unit by the time we went in to do it. Yeah, I mean, I can understand why it's, you know, it's a mixed bag because it is as a record. We were actually starting to pull in different directions, and the band wasn't the sort of coherent, happy ship that it had been up to that point. Mainly because times had changed, and you know, audiences had changed, audience expectations had changed, and I think we were a bit adrift, you know. It was around the time of the whole New Romantic thing, and therefore, sort of, you know, traditional guitar bands were having a pretty hard time of it. Like I said, audiences were dwindling, and it was just becoming a bit of a slog really to do.
Yeah,
to be honest. And you know, things that would have been resolved before with just, like, you know, a discussion became huge arguments, and I think we all took our eye off the ball a bit, really. Right. Having said that, I think that, you know, when the record is good, it's very good.
The next track, and I mean, this is just a generational thing, is was the other side of the single, was Bits of Kids. And it's pretty much a bit, it's kind of, you know, I went to school with people who were effectively Bits of Kids. I'm sure everybody did, of that generation. Tell us about it.
Well, it's my favourite track on the record. And I still think it's a very, very underrated song in what we do. It was written about the whole latchkey kids phenomenon, wherein both parents were forced through financial strictures to have to go out and work. And, you know, while it was traditionally the role of, you know, your mum would be there at lunchtime when you came home from school to give you a bowl of soup and a sandwich or whatever and pack you back to school in the afternoon, that just wasn't happening for a lot of kids. And more of them were coming home and letting themselves in and, you know, risking burning the house down, trying to fend for themselves. It came about through Gordon's girlfriend, who's a school teacher, and she would come home and tell us these stories. And they were just, I mean, a lot of them were really heartbreaking, you know, sort of single mothers trying to make ends meet, and the fact that they were getting next to no support. In fact, we're almost being frowned upon, almost still, you know, almost that sort of, God, she got married out of wedlock. It's disgraceful. It was almost this medieval bloody attitude to people. And it was the kids that were suffering. And, I think it's a very direct and in a way obvious lyric, but it's all the more powerful because of that, you know?
Mm.
strong in our old time.
Now Then was a great piece of work, but Fickle fans had jumped ship and the album didn't sell very well, and the demoralized band would break up in 1983. Jake Burns later revealed, "The first split was a bit acrimonious. Instead of talking through our difficulties, we wound up having fistfights." After the demise of Stiff Little Fingers, Jake Burns tried to form a band with Bruce Foxton from The Jam. He worked as a producer with the BBC, and he flirted with a solo career. But he would reform Stiff Little Fingers a mere 5 years later. Stiff Little Fingers weren't just Irish firebrands, they were a quintessential punk band, and they didn't flame out after one record like the Sex Pistols. They had time to develop, and the band's sound changed significantly over the course of four albums. I suppose many of their fans, especially at the time, preferred that they stick with the punk rock aggression and attitude of the first two records, but I love where they ended up on Now Then. It's great power pop, and it still has a punk edge. And now, to play us out.
What does that mean, to play us out? I don't know what that means, to play us out. What does that mean? To end the show?
Yeah.
For example, just listen to the last song from Now Then. It's called Is That What You Fought the War For? And what more could you ask for from a Stiff Little Fingers song? It's an incredible song, and it was such a great way to close out the band's classic era. So check it out. This is a song from Now Then by Stiff Little Fingers. It's called Is That What You Fought the War For?
And then finally, is that what you fought the war for?
Yeah, it's kind of the flip side to Tin Soldiers. It's the big crashing finale to the album, but it's also... the album was written around the coming towards the end of the first Thatcher government. And while they were very keen on being very sort of gung-ho British and imperial, if you looked around the country at the time, there wasn't a lot of evidence of the home fit for heroes that people had been promised in the past.
Yeah.
And it was a bit, you know, it struck us as you know, sort of obviously ironic that is this really what, you know, what was in the brochure at the time? So the, you know, the "Is that what you fought the war for?" was the, you know, the obvious line to go down, although it was, you know, 40 years hence. But had things really improved that much? Or given that things had improved in the interim, i.e. the welfare state and all that, which was suddenly being eroded and chipped away at, you know, surely that was what you fought the war for. That was what you wanted, was a better country, a better life for everyone, not just for the select few. So that's kind of where the song came from. Just as a quick aside, if we've got time to get it in, it also was the first time we used timpanis on a record, because we wanted that big sort of dramatic Dam Busters type drum roll for the middle section. And not being a tub thumper myself, I had no idea how these things were tuned. And I just thought it was the screws around the top, the nuts around the top, that actually sort of tightened it up, you know, got the tension right. All because I'd seen Dolph do it. He was out there tapping all in, right around the top, tightening it all up so it all, surface tension was all even. And it was set to the note. Well, I thought it was a bit like tuning a guitar. That was it set. And these things come with a pedal at the bottom, which actually do have the notes written on them.
Right.
So, you know, this was set to E, which is what we needed. And he had a second set to D because he went from one down. So it went... That was the deal. And every time I came back in from doing a keyboard overdub, I thought it was the funniest thing on the planet to hit this thing and stand on the pedal. So it would go... Boing. I thought this was great fun. I had no idea that meant you had to retune the whole feckin' drum every time. And it was only when sort of Dolph was like tearing his hair out and screaming that these things be sent back because they were defective because they couldn't hold their fucking tune in for more than 5 seconds. And I walked past and did this, and he suddenly stopped mid-rant and looked at me and went, "You've been doing that all album." I went, "Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?" He went, "You bastard," and flew at me across the studio, ready to sort of string me up by the thumbs. You know?
And that's now then, and thanks once again, Jay.
No problem.
I'll be back.